This conference is being recorded.
This is Luke Allison with CriticalBench.com, and I'm here with Jason Dolby. Jason, how are you?
Pretty good, Luke. How are you doing?
Doing good, thanks. Just as a quick introduction, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and maybe about your athletic background.
Sure. My father, he teaches Subakdo, Korean form of martial arts, and I've been a part of that since age five, really. And my father was really one of the first martial artists to actually have a full gym with free weights and whatnot inside of his dojang. So that was always something that was interesting for me to see, you know, my dad incorporating the weight training with the martial arts, and it kind of allowed me to get a taste of what strength training brought to the table as far as benefiting our sports, you know, whether it be the martial arts or later on when I played football and whatnot. So I got a taste of that early through my dad's studio, and from there, you know, played football and was on the track team throughout high school. Actually, field. I wasn't fast enough for the track, so I did the shot put, discus, pole vault, and long jump. And then after that, just really, really got into training free weights, more of like a bodybuilder type style. And I did that for several years. And I would develop a little bit of stiffness and things in my joints. And I mean, I thought everything was right on track, but then I just pushed forward and pushed forward. And sometimes I would have little tweaks in my shoulder and I'd push past it or in my hip and so on and so forth. And about 4 years ago, I was introduced to my first kettlebell, and I swung my first kettlebell, and I was actually confused because I thought I was pretty strong. I thought I was in fairly good shape, but what I really had was gym strength, not true strength. And I had to step back, and I was wondering why I was completely gassed out after 20 seconds of swinging a kettlebell that was only 70 pounds. It just didn't make sense. So I took a step back and really started thinking about it, and just figured out. And you know, the more I thought about our ancestors and, you know, the movements of our ancestors, whether it be for exercise, for work, or even if you take it way back in history, you know, you want to eat, you got to go catch your dinner and bring it back. So I really started thinking, man, true strength involves everything at the same time. So this makes sense now, because I was always that guy, you know, in 24-hour fitness or Gold's or whatever, where, incline bench press, you know, day one, and then, you know, Wednesday I'm doing leg press or whatever it was. But I was being passively supported by a bench or a seat. Part of my body was completely stabilized and supported by something outside of my own body while I would focus on one area, which is great for building size, but it doesn't have a whole lot of neurological carryover into the real-world strength. But so the challenge there was for me to really figure out, you know, why I was so gassed out and tired with this new style of training, and then I wanted a little bit more of it because I wanted to challenge myself with that, and so I progressed and progressed. Really fell in love with the kettlebells, and then I started thinking about other things as well. And just anything that was awkward and heavy, I just started training with those things, using my whole body, usually on my feet, or some kind of training where it was my body weight versus the ground and whatnot. And it's just really been great. And as I moved on and got better, I really wanted to learn more. And I met a guy named Steve Cotter, who you guys are probably familiar with. He runs the International Kettlebell and Fitness Federation. And so I started traveling with him and actually teaching with him as well. So it's been a nice ride, definitely a huge benefit for me being around some of those guys as far as education and fitness. And now I actually compete in the sport of kettlebell lifting. So it's been really, really great.
Sounds like it's come full circle nicely.
Definitely, definitely.
For maybe the people that aren't as familiar with kettlebells, they do have a bit of a history, and a lot of people are becoming familiar with them now, but maybe hit the high points for some of those people that aren't as familiar.
Oh, definitely. I would say right off the bat, simply a kettlebell is one tool, takes care of true strength, core strength, and cardiovascular conditioning. And a lot of people, you know, debate that or think that that's not possible until they spend a couple months working with the bells. And they know what we're talking about. When I say true strength, I mean true strength from the true strength is from the nose through the nose. It always has been. It always will be. So that's what I mean by the true strength. But the kettlebell is great. You're incorporating everything you have in your system, and you're tapping into the true strength. Obviously, your core is completely engaged. Otherwise, you're going to tip over, fall down, lose your balance, or whatnot. And then at the rate you're breathing, I mean, your heart is really, really taking a pounding, your cardiopulmonary, cardiovascular system, and it is just amazing. And also, too, I mean, they're portable, and they come in all shapes and sizes and all different weights. The sport bells, the competition bells, are actually all the same size. So a little bit different for some people that are used to maybe only seeing the cast iron type of kettlebells. When they play around with the sport bells, or in other words, the competition bells, they're all the same size. So nothing ever changes neurologically. Once you learn the technique, you just all you have to do is, from that point, just gain more strength and gain more strength endurance. So in a nutshell, really, truly, an amazing bang for your buck tool.
One of the things that looks really interesting if you watch someone working with kettlebells is they're doing kettlebell variations of Olympic lifts. And that seems weird because Olympic lifts, they seem really sort of inaccessible. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, with the kettlebell, I mean, the kettlebell, you've always had, you know, the kettlebell snatch and the clean and the jerk. And they're different. The barbell snatch and the barbell clean and jerk, you're sort of limited, for example, in your transverse plane. In other words, your plane of rotation, you're a bit limited there with the bar. So you have to move in a certain fashion, and that's it. With the kettlebell, you have a little bit more freedom in your spine, and a lot of times, like, for example, with the snatch, you're using, you know, one arm and not two arms. The kettlebells are obviously sub-maximal load compared to, like, an Olympic weightlifting or, you know, powerlifting, where these guys are just, you know, moving a ton of weight, but maybe one rep or two reps. Kettlebell sub-maximal, so it allows more freedom of movement, but it's we're able to go longer with the kettlebell because of the submaximal load. Instead of being like locked into one or two reps with, you know, 300 pounds, some of these guys are just doing an amazing amount of weight and weightlifting. But the kettlebell training, submaximal weight, you can kind of work for time. It's up to you. I mean, it's all relative. So a person can grab a kettlebell that's maybe 120 pounds, and then obviously that's going to be a couple reps for them, or they can, you know, work with a kettlebell that's maybe, you know, 20 pounds or 25 pounds or something, and continue for quite a while. They the lifts, they're both very beneficial as far as, you know, developing power, but as far as strength endurance, the kettlebell is dominant, and as far as overall strength, the barbell, I would say, is dominant. But Steve Cotter once said that the kettlebell lifters are right in between, like a marathon runner and a power lifter, where you have the marathon runner where they can run all day long, and they may have trouble moving a rock out of the pathway to continue their run. And then you have the power lifters who may go on the trail and have no problem moving that rock out of the way, but then, you know, can't finish their run or whatnot. So the kettlebell lifter kind of falls right in between, a strength endurance athlete. I hope that helped out.
Certainly. some of the observations I had made just on looking at the differences between, you know, those two, the Olympic and the kettlebell variations, are, you know, things like ergonomics, hand placement, range of motion, technique, and then motor unit recruitment. And that's all sort of really fancy, but it seems to scale down, you know, for people that they can work with it. Is that, you know, sort of consistent with your experience?
As far as the technique with, you know, working with a barbell or a clean or a snatch, or it's going to be a bit different. Obviously, with a kettlebell, you don't have to drop under it nearly as much on a snatch, again, being sub-maximal load. Hand placement is obviously to differ because, well, the kettlebell is basically on the back of your wrist forearm area. And unlike a dumbbell or a barbell, you don't really have to have too much concern of the handle of the kettlebell actually rolling out of your hand backwards and falling on top of you or hurting someone else. The only way for a kettlebell to really hurt you once it's above your head is for you to either, you know, pass out or, you know, have your muscle completely give out and then have it fall. Or, which is, I've never seen it, but I mean, if obviously someone's bones broke, if they had a kettlebell that was way too heavy for them and they were a fragile individual, which they probably wouldn't get it above their head anyway. But as the kettlebell sits on the back of the forearm and rests there, it's pretty safe. You can kind of actually relax the flexors in your forearm and your wrist once it's overhead. And with the barbell, not quite as much relaxation, because once you take your mind from controlling where that bar is, you can be in some trouble. So the bell, we're up above head. And the handle of the kettlebell, we, especially in the sport training, we like to have the handle at sort of a 45 angle coming across the palm. So the handle of the kettlebell actually sits on top of the hip of the palm, which is like basically right above your ulna, the forearm bone there. So you can kind of relax and have your hand almost extended and relaxed. We call it like a false grip.
Very good, very good. You mentioned previously that you have experience with kettlebell competitions. Talk a little bit about how you got into that and what that process is like actually.
Okay. Kettlebell competition was not something that I ever really thought I would be interested in the beginning, because at first, when I started lifting, you know, the kettlebells, I was truly all about, okay, well, let me see what I can muscle up in 3 reps. Let me see what I can do for 5 reps. I want to get heavier and heavier kettlebell and this and that. So that was kind of my deal in the beginning. Although I had, you know, I did have the concept of, you know, building that true strength where I'm building my structural integrity throughout, from the toes through my nose. I had that whole idea and I was working on it. But I really, once I discovered what the kettlebell competitions were and how long they had to go 10 minutes, and they were putting up these ridiculous numbers, and I was just like, you know what, I don't know, that's maybe too much cardio, and, you know, you can't, if you train like that, you're going to lose strength and this and that. And so that's kind of what kept me away from that idea. And then I said, well, you know what, you know, these people I really respect are suggesting it. So I said, well, you know, okay, I'll play around with it and try a couple of 2-minute sets, 3-minute sets or whatnot, and trying to relax under load, which you have to do in kettlebell sport to survive and finish your time. But it was definitely wild. It was pretty humbling. But the best thing about my training all the way up to my first competition, which was in May of 2007 at the AKC Classic in Las Vegas. May of 2008, I apologize. And that was the American Kettlebell Club Classic in Las Vegas. And my training all the way up until that competition was definitely humbling, but it was great to see that I was able to adapt. Kettlebell lifters are, if you put your mind to it and you stay disciplined and you're training, you know, between 4 and 6 days a week, I would say, and really just working on surviving in that rack position. In kettlebell lifting, the rack position is when you have a kettlebell or two kettlebells.
For the men, we compete with two kettlebells. For the either the long cycle, which is a clean and jerk over and over again for 10 minutes, or you can compete in the biathlon and you'll jerk two kettlebells. The men jerk two kettlebells, the women jerk one kettlebell, and then you have the snatch, of course. But that rack position, trying to adapt to that rack position is very, very challenging in the beginning, because myself, along with many of my other colleagues, I mean, we used to just push heavy weight and set it down, right? Well, Luke, I'm telling you, man, sitting there trying to find your rack with two kettlebells and your elbows are sliding around your stomach and you're trying to find your hip bone to rest on, and it's very, very challenging. But I was very happy to see that I did not lose any of my strength, which was bizarre. Now, before I was training for, you know, 3, 4, 5 rep sets with as heavy a kettlebell as I could, and then I dropped down. And amateurs, of course, the first two competitions I did were amateur, which is competing with 24 kilogram kettlebells, about 3 pounds in each hand, and that was coming down in weight quite a bit from what I was using for the 3 or 4 or 5 rep sets from, you know, a year earlier or whatnot. But I was shocked. I go into this training and started getting all this muscle endurance, and then one day I was just messing around. I said, "Oh, let me see what I can do." And I cleaned a pair of 70 pounders, and then I just wanted to do a set of strict presses to see where I was. Well, let's just say I probably added I increased by about 80%, actually, in the number I was able to strict press. And I wasn't training for strict press. Really, really cool. But it takes a lot of time to train for the competition. It's a lot of survival, working the sets for long periods of time. A lot of times we'll start off by, there's a couple of options you have. One is what I did for my first competition was purely just pick my bells and then finish my time. So I would do my best to finish the 10-minute time period. Of course, in the beginning, I couldn't make it 10 minutes. But what I would do is, let's say if I made it 7 minutes and I had nothing left in me at all, Luke, I would sit there in the rack position for the remaining 3 minutes and just grind it out and just try to survive without dropping the bells. And, I mean, that's a challenge enough as it is. But what you'll find is that over time, training in this fashion, your connective tissue actually starts to become pretty resilient. And when your connective tissue becomes resilient, the nice thing then is that your musculature can actually relax a little bit more than it used to when you didn't have this, you know, this connective tissue strength and resilience. So it's pretty wild what takes place in the body. It's like building structural integrity. And it's real hard to build true structural integrity without testing your body under high stress for time. So it's really great. So that's one of your options as far as the training. Back to your original question was, you know, sitting there under time and finishing, and then obviously you just add your reps. So you want to make your time and then train to add your repetitions in that time. And then you move up to the next kettlebell as far as the next weight in kettlebell. And then you can start over and work in the same fashion. Let me get my 6 minutes, no matter what it takes, even if I get 7 reps. And then, okay, now great. Now I'm working up to, you know, 20 reps in 7 minutes. And now I'm at, you know, 40 in 7. Okay, now I push my time and I try to make my 10 minutes. And even if I get to 7 or 8 and then I have to hold it in the rack position and just survive until that 10-minute mark, you know, then that's what I'm going to do. So that's one way to train. And then the other way is you can kind of take, you can look at it from more of a volume standpoint, where you tell yourself, all right, I'm going to do 10 sets, and I'm going to challenge myself with the weight I'm going to compete with, or maybe a weight slightly heavier than you're going to compete with, right, a couple of kettlebells. And you'll work for, like, let's say 1-minute sets. And you're really challenging your nervous system because you're going at a high rate of speed and really trying to bang out as many reps as you can with proper technique in that 1 minute period, and then you take your rest, right? And so initially you're going to probably have to start out with maybe taking 2 minutes rest, 3 minutes rest, or something like that before your next set. And you just continue this type of training, and instead of saying, all right, well, let me just, you know, all of a sudden go with a heavier kettle, or let me try to just go with one shot. I've been training in this way for, you know, 3 weeks, and now I'm going to go 10 minutes straight. Well, this style of training coming from, like, the volume standpoint is a little different, because you'll take those sets, and then each week you're slowly decreasing your rest time between those one-minute sets. Does that make sense? So after a certain number of weeks or months, or it depends on the individual, but you sort of start bridging those gaps between the sets, and then now all of a sudden you're pretty much going 10 minutes at a pretty solid pace.
That's good stuff. If anybody followed all of that, they should be ready to compete. That's a lot of work that you just outlined. In terms of preparation, do you sort of look at contests and work back, or are you training and just ready all the time? Do you structure your training a certain way to be at certain places at certain dates? How does that work for you?
Right. Great question, Luke. I do actually look back. I do look back at my competitions, my previous competitions, and I take those and I look at them as just data, really just data to take and then throw in the mix and hold on to that. So if I look back and say, okay, well, I did this for my first competition. This aspect of it worked out well. That was great. I want to hold on to that. But let's say, you know, taking that, you know, crazy energy drink right before the competition wasn't the best idea, because, you know, going 10 minutes with a high heart rate is, I mean, it's going to be high regardless from your lifting, right? But now, for example, like if you took an energy drink that was going to pump you up, and, you know, like back in the day it was some orange or something, like, you know, but whatever it is now, you take something that kind of stimulates you. Great stuff to assist with, you know, if I'm going to do, you know, a 5-rep deadlift set with some really heavy weight. But when you're trying to survive 10 minutes and get as many reps as you can, when your next competitor is right next to you and you can actually hear his judge calling out his numbers, I mean, it's a mind game. So you hear his numbers, you hear the guy's numbers to the left of you, and then a lot of times you see him on the scoreboard too, like who's ahead of who, and you know right where you are. So that's a lot of stress. Everyone's on the platform at the same time. So you have to deal with that, and that's going to elevate your heart as it is, right? So that was one mistake I made for my first competition. I took one of those energy drinks, and it spiked my heart rate before I even started. So guaranteed that's automatically, you know, losing a handful of repetitions over 10 minutes right there. So I may look at that and say, okay, that was a mistake, but, you know, my training all the way up till and my sleep was great. Write down and keep whatever was great. Second competition, I may say, all right, well, this was great, but this wasn't so great, so on and so forth. And I hold on to the good stuff, Luke, and then just basically let go of all the negative, and so I'll keep that. And then as far as when the competition ends, no, I do not jump right back in and then continue with my 10-minute sets. What I prefer to do is actually go into some more of an interval style training with much heavier kettlebells. With I might do a long cycle set. My event is a long cycle where you clean them and jerk them over and over and over and over for 10 minutes. So that's my deal. And then I'm always looking at ways to better that performance, better my clean, better my jerk, or whatnot. So I'll look at different exercises that I can do. Like maybe I'll work 1 week where I take like a Monday, I'm just focusing on cleans, right? But I'll do a 1 minute or 2 minute set of cleans with much heavier kettlebells than I compete with, and then take a certain break, you know, maybe 2 minutes, one and a half, whatever, and try to close that gap over, you know, over a month period or whatever it is. Then the following, you know, maybe 2 days later, I'll work on the jerk, with much heavier kettlebells than I compete with, and I'll do that volume style where I'm kind of I'm working at a fast pace, the technique for a minute or 2 minutes, and then I'll take a break, and then sometimes try to bridge those gaps. And then I also do some different things as well. And I guess what I call off-season is anything. For me, off-season is anything that is further away than about 12 to 14 weeks. Yeah, about 12 weeks, I would say. About 12, anything further away from the competition than 12 weeks, I would say, is kind of the off-season where I'm still, of course, doing my kettlebell training, but I incorporate a ton of different things. Like, I am in love with the Girard trap bar. That Girard trap bar, I don't know if you're familiar with that. Deadlifts with the Girard trap bar are absolutely phenomenal because the load is actually in line with your center of mass from the start to the finish, unlike a barbell deadlift, which is out in front of you, kind of pulling you more toward the ball of your feet. With the Girard trap bar, is great because you can load through the heels and really drive. I love that thing. I do a lot of heavy sets with those, except for I usually don't do, 3 to 5 rep sets anymore. I'll work on maybe 15 or 20 repetition sets with a heavy weight and just work till I get those numbers with a certain weight. So that way I'm still kind of staying in my strength endurance area, but at the same time I'm dealing with heavier loads than I do deal with, let's say, 12 weeks and closer to my competitions. Does that make sense?
Sure. Now, is there a part of your preparation that's going to focus on, improving attributes, flexibility, things like that, or simply what people would consider assistance lifts, non-kettlebells, other implements, things like that?
Yes, absolutely. I'm actually huge on mobilizing the joint actively. So joint mobility is really, really huge for me. I do a ton of joint mobility. I'd probably say between 3 and 5 times a day, I actually go through a full body joint mobility program. I may mix it up. I start from the toes and go up to my head and then out through the arms. I may reverse it. I may just mobilize the spine, the hips, and the ankles or something like that. But I train a lot of people throughout the day from various backgrounds. And what I know for sure is that in the past couple of years that I've been teaching the joint mobility and applying it to my own health as well, it's just been great to see my clients over time moving better, feeling better, and having less pain. In fact, just yesterday, a client of mine who is about 70 literally says, "Hey, what's it here? I don't have this chronic SI problem anymore," because her SI joint would just flare up all the time and she would be in and out of the chiropractor getting adjusted and popped on and this and that, right? But when you actually mobilize the joints yourself, Luke, what's phenomenal about it is your brain actually adheres to the benefit. In other words, your nervous system remembers what was being done. And it's just so cool. So, I mean, everything in the body is a big cross. It's a big X. It's that cross-body relationship. So, for example, my right wrist has a neurological cross-body relationship with my left ankle. And it goes down to, as detailed as, my left thumb and my right big toe actually have the same neurological relationship. So pretty, pretty cool. And mobilizing the joints is key because then the muscle tissue is much less likely to get hung up because the nervous system is really what governs everything, and the nervous system is active all the time. And basically whatever you do, you're going to get better at. And your nervous system knows that and is adapting to that every single day of our lives. So if you're sitting at the desk right now, you're getting exactly better, exactly that position, if that makes sense. And that's why a lot of these people out there, especially nowadays, they kind of fall into this zone where they're just, get up, go to work and this and that, come back, take a break. Okay, maybe I go to the gym or whatever. But in society nowadays, we have what I like to call the triple C threat, which is coming at all of us, well, at least most of us in most countries. But it's the couch, the computer, and the car. And you think about that, right? Think about how many minutes, how many hours, whatever, are spent at either of those three locations, on the couch, in front of the computer, or in the car. And they all kind of morph us into that forward shoulder postural position. And they're all seated, right? So when we get off of work or whatnot and then, you know, go home, eat dinner, you know, you wake up, you're in the car, you're driving to work, you're slouched over, then you're at work at the desk, computer slouched, boom, then I'm home, eat dinner, okay, I'm on the couch, I'm slouched again, then I want to go to the gym. And a lot of times these folks will come in the gym, and I see these guys all the time, and they come in and they sit, sit down on this chest press machine, or let me sit down on this leg press or whatever. And the problem there is now they're sort of exacerbating their current scenario, right? That triple C threat is still now, it's still in effect. So that's why I love training the body so much by using everything at once, true strength, you know, from the toes through the nose, being upright and really, really key, or, you know, working against the ground. But all of that is just really, really important in combination with keeping your body and your joints truly mobilized and loose so that you don't become sort of coagulated. Just always remember, motion is lotion and rest is rust. And it sounds funny, it sounds silly, but that's the absolute truth, man. And as long as you stay flowing with your body, you're much less likely to have these injuries that catch up with us over time. And why is it that, let's say, a pro athlete never, you know, breaks a certain record or reaches a certain status? A lot of times it's injury, right? Because he gets injured, and then that's a setback. So then it takes him a long time to move up to where he was before, okay? And then maybe he goes a little bit beyond that. Boom, he gets injured again. Now there's a setback. So then all this time he has. So imagine the time that, imagine how efficient it would be for him and effective it would be for him to actually go through all that time without, you know, 80% of those injuries, just by actually keeping his whole skeletal system completely mobilized actively on a daily basis.
Very good stuff. Say, for example, you had a client that was interested in competing in kettlebells, whether it be the snatch or the long cycle. Mm-hmm. Do you give them guidance? Do you give them benchmarks? What do you tell them in terms of, maybe you're ready, you need to train harder, you're absolutely not ready, or you're ready? How would you address a question like that?
Well, first off, if it's one of my athletes that I'm training, we're pretty much going to know when they're ready. But if someone's just asking me over the phone, or they write me an email or something like that, I say, hey, here's the deal. Choose your event first, see how that event feels for you, and if it's good to your body, in other words, if the motion doesn't bother you and your body responds to it okay, all right, then now start the training. And as you're training, really focus on saying, okay, what's the goal here, right? I have to go a certain period of time, I have to go 10 minutes, and then it's kind of nice to go online and maybe you can look at different people's weight classes and things like that and see what numbers they're doing, and then tell yourself, okay, let me pick a reasonable goal for myself, not to stress on trying to beat these other people, but, you know, just knowing that kind of where they are, how long the others have been competing and what their numbers are, to say, okay, well, that's fine. This guy's been doing it for 3 years. He's doing this number, and I'm going to go into my first competition maybe in a few months, and, you know, my whole goal will not be to try to necessarily beat this guy, but whatever my number is that I have set as a goal for myself, to focus on that number and remain calm and get through it. So to train for that, just again, really, you have a couple of options, which is, you know, work your time, get your bells, work up to where you finish your 10 minutes. And let's say if you're going to compete amateur, so someone starting out amateur is going to compete with the 24 kg bells, and you may start out training with 16 kilogram bells, maybe the 12 kilogram bells.
but you're going to work and train with those until you reach your 10 minutes, and then you try to actually increase your reps to where you want them, right? Say you wanted to hit maybe 50 reps in the long cycle for your first event or whatever. So, okay, boom, hit your 50 with your 16K bells. Now, boom, now you're going to jump to the 24 and then work on getting to your 10 minutes. And then now where are you as far as your repetitions in that 10-minute period? And that's pretty much what I would tell somebody who was getting ready to start. You know, feel it out. Know what your goal is. Is your goal 50? How close are you? And if you're not close to 50, you know, are you willing to step up on the platform to get the experience and have a blast and compete anyways? You know, so as anybody can get out there and compete. You know, it just really depends on the individual and the individual's goal, and to say, okay, am I okay with getting on stage if I'm not near that, or do I want to wait till the next competition where I'm a little bit closer to my own goal? Hopefully that helped.
Absolutely. I think we're about out of time, but I want to give you an opportunity to sort of direct people maybe where to find you on the internet, how to get in touch with you, things like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A couple of ways you can get in touch with me. my new blog-based website, it's called CaliCaveman.com. I'll spell that. That is C-A-L-I, Caveman, CaveMan.com. Again, that's CaliCaveman.com, and that's going to be my site where basically I blog about my training and where I'm going to be teaching and the events that are coming up and things like that, and also to share fitness tips with my people and those who are interested in the whole caveman training mentality, which is basically just using your whole body, you know, the way our ancestors had to use their strength. So there was nothing stabilizing them. They were using true strength. And that's my spot there. And then you can also find me at IKFF.com. Again, that's International Kettlebell and Fitness Federation, IKFF.com. And if you go to Instructor Locator and go to California, you'll find me right under there, Jason Dolby. And then also, too, if you would like to email, you can email me at CaliCaveman@yahoo.com.
Well, Jason, I definitely appreciate the time, and thank you for the willingness to share such great information.
No problem, Luke. It was a pleasure.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care, my friend.